Hi, everybody. Will Alexander here with this week's interview chair, brought to you by Dog News Magazine, America's weekly magazine devoted to the sport of purebred dogs. This week on the chair, we have a very dear friend of mine, Clayton Harris. Clayton's a lot of fun. He has a lot of information, and he's one of the hardest working handlers I know out there. All right, guys, sit back and relax and listen to Clayton. Hi, everybody. Will Alexander here with the interview chair. And today in the chair is my good friend, Clayton Harris, professional handler, busy man. Hey, Clayton, how are you?
Very good.
Good to see you. What are you up to besides showing dogs? Anything?
Yeah, taking care of the farm. We got a lot going on out here.
What do you have at the farm?
We raise like all of our own meat, everything except for cows. We do our own chickens. We do our own pigs. All of our gardens, we're into canning. I mean, we're practically live right directly off of our farm.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah. I didn't know that.
If I go to the grocery store, it's for salt and pepper and milk and cheese. You know, that's about it. You know, everything else.
You are a busy guy then. And you still have time to go to dog shows.
Yeah. It keeps me busy.
Well, where's the farm?
Right outside of Lexington, just south of Lexington, Kentucky.
Wow. Good for you. That's crazy. People always think about doing those things and they never seem to have time or they never start doing those things. But that's amazing, man. Good for you. Tell me how you got started in dogs. And then we'll talk about how you started farming.
Yeah. Well, my parents bred Norwegian Elkhounds. You know, it was
how old were you?
You know, I wasn't allowed to show my first dog until I was 10 years old. Okay. And you know, but my parents showed them and I would go to the shows with them. And then on my 10th birthday, I showed, and I remember this because I showed my brother's dog, his junior's dog, and I showed him at Durango Kennel Club to Dee Hutchinson. She gave me second in the class because I did a backwards triangle. Yeah. And I still remember my very first time in the ring, you know, where I was at and everything.
And did you have fun your first time in the ring? Did you want to keep going?
Yeah. I mean, I was addicted. You know, like I remember, you know, my mother and I used to go to most of the shows together. And I remember always being upset if she didn't let me stay for best in show. You know, I wanted to stay for the whole thing. And she's like, you know, we have a long drive. You have school tomorrow. And I would be very upset if she didn't let me stay for Sunday best in show. So
that's amazing because that was the norm for me growing up as well. I always wanted to stay. Never everybody leaves, so it's just seems different now, you know. But I'm glad.
Yeah.
And there's the odd one that you see that wants to hang around forever and watch and listen and whatnot. But
no, it doesn't happen most of the time. You show people show their breeds and then they leave immediately as soon as the breed's over.
Yeah, it was never like that when I was a kid. Even if my parents lost Irish Setters, I'd go and hide somewhere so that they couldn't find me so I could still watch. So.
I spent the day watching everything, you know, running around. And, you know, I think my parents used to have to chase me down sometimes and come find me. But, you know, I stayed out of trouble for the most part.
It's a normal story for us. So you're 10 years old. You're showing your first dog. What happened next?
Well, we just continued with the elk hounds and everything and, you know, showed them all, you know, all through growing up, all through high school and everything. And one of my mother's best friends who also bred elk hounds, she bred bloodhounds. And I show the bloodhound and juniors there for a while. They're a very difficult breed to show, as you know, especially for a junior, you know, you're either first or last with that breed. You know, it's one or the other. You didn't get in the middle anywhere. You know, and then I always knew this is what I wanted to do. And I had gotten a job for the summer when I was 17 and with Andy Linton. And he flew me out and I went on the Idaho Montana circuit with him. And Scott Summer had flown up there with him and Adam had flown up there. He was showing the Lakeland Johnny, and I think he was just starting JR. I remember JR was brand new when he brought him. And I met Scott, and, you know, we kind of got along. And he had offered me a job. So, you know, after high school, I went down to Houston and started working for Scott.
That's where you, is that where you got your love for terriers with Scott?
Well, actually, I fell in love with terriers because every dog show I went to, Clay Cody was showing a Lakeland Terrier named Awesome Blossom. And he went best in show at every dog show that I went
to. It seemed like it, right?
Yeah. You know, and I mean, we didn't go all the time. You know, we only did, you know, growing up in Colorado, we did Colorado, Wyoming, you know, would go to Arizona on a rare occasion, just the surrounding states. That was kind of Clay's ground. You know, that's where Clay showed. Well, I want to go best in show. I'm a kid. That's what I want to do. So you need one of those to go best in show. So I said, I want a terrier. My mother said, you cannot have a terrier in my house. She refused it. And then, you know, I knew Scott had done terriers. You know, I learned about it. And that's, you know, one of the biggest reasons that I'd gone to Scott. You know, because he had done, he was also a terrier handler. You know, all breed, but he did terriers.
Right, yeah. That's a neat story about Clay, because even when I was working for Bobby Stebbins, Clay was showing George. And it seemed like he won every best in show. It just seemed like he won every best in show. So it was just fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's kind of where I fell in love with it. You know, and went down that path of the terriers, and I just, you know, I enjoyed them.
How long were you with Scott?
I was total with Scott for 6 years, but there was a 5-year break in between. And what happened is, Scott would probably say it didn't happen this way, but I'll tell you the truth, is Scott fired me. He thought that I needed to do something else. So he had fired me. But in the meantime, Rick Shishudian was in between kids because he always had a kid working for him that he wanted to teach because he loved teaching. And Scott had gotten me the job at Rick's. And so I'd gone to Rick's and I was
with Rick's. Had you known Rick before?
No, I really didn't. You know, like my first, you know, especially the first year that I worked for Scott, I think I went to maybe 3 dog shows. You know, I stayed in the kennel. I really didn't go to a lot of dog shows. And like I had seen Rick at some of the shows as a judge, but, you know, and I love to read, you know, like old magazines and everything. And, you know, like, and I would always hear people talk about him. And I was very intimidated because, you know, he was always put on this very high pedestal. And so I was a little nervous going, but, you know, it was great opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad that I had taken it. It was nice. He sat me down. You know, Rick used his meetings were always on the couch, and he would sit you down on the couch in the living room and want to talk about it and how are things going and talk about the dogs, you know. And one thing I missed about Rick is if he was judging somewhere and I was at a dog show somewhere, you know, I showed the wires and we would come home and Monday morning, we would sit down and eat breakfast together and we would talk about the dogs that we had seen, you know, of any breed. Yeah, you know, what he had seen, you know, oh, this is really pretty, you know, or this dog and this dog. And, you know, we were able to talk about it and I was allowed to have my opinion. He never said that I was right or wrong, you know, and he encouraged, you know, discussion about the dogs, you know. And one thing that I loved his approach to talking about dogs, you were never allowed to talk about the bad in a dog. He never let you say anything bad about a dog. You know, I mean, it could have been, you know, one of the ugliest dogs you'd ever seen, but there's something good about it. And that's what he wanted you to see. Never the bad in a dog.
It was funny. Like I showed to him quite a bit when I was showing dogs. And, you know, because you're a kid, and that's Rick. So you're like, you're in awe of him the whole time. And so you would ask him, you know, what do you think of this dog? He always gave you a good answer. Ah, beautiful kid. Ah, this is a good kid. But I always found that if he called me over and say, where'd you find this? That he really liked it. So,
yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Well, and he loved to look at dogs. You know, I mean, almost every day we took his dogs out in the driveway, and he made me do a million down and backs and side, and he wanted to see the offside and this side, and, you know, and as an impatient kid, you know, got very annoying sometimes, but he loved to look at his dogs. You know, in fact, the carpet in his house was bright green. It looked like a golf course green because he liked to see his dogs on the grass. So if it was raining, I'd bring him in the living room and he'd sit on the couch and look at his dogs on the grass. You know, it was the ugliest carpet you'd ever seen, but the dogs looked good on it.
Yeah. Well, what an opportunity. Must have been amazing, you know.
Yeah, so that's where I learned.
Yeah.
So I was there for five years.
5 years.
You know, and then, yeah. And then I went back to Scott for another 3 after being with Rick.
Yeah. Now, did you just choose that 5 years and that was enough? Or
I probably would have stayed longer, you know, but towards the end of 5 years, you know, Kathy Regis had passed away.
Yeah.
And, you know, she really was the person that was able to keep everything going, you know, financially and the dogs. And, you know, Rick was starting to age. He wasn't breeding. He really was not breeding at all anymore. You know, it just wasn't financially possible for me to continue doing what I was doing, you know, because I made a salary working for Rick, but I had to groom pets for my salary. And back then, he only charged $30 for a shaved down wire fox terrier. And he paid me $250 a week. But in order for me to make my $250, I had to groom $500 worth of pets. You know,
right.
So, you know, it just wasn't. And, you know, Scott had offered me to come back. And, you know, it was kind of the next step. You know,
and how old were you when you left Rick's?
Oh, I don't know. How old was I when I left Rick's? 25, 26, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
25, 26.
And you went back to Scott. So now you're back helping working with Scott. How long were you there again?
Another 3 years.
Another 3 years.
Yeah.
Obviously Scott and Rick had a huge influence on you. What other handlers or breeders had that kind of influence on you?
Well, I mean, just watching and learning and paying attention to whoever's around. I mean, you used to sit and watch, you know, everybody. I mean, obviously I paid more attention to the terrier people. So watching Bill and watching Gabriel and obviously Peter, you know, and watching Ernesto when he worked for Peter, you know, and I mean, even Andrew, you know, watching all the guys, you know, and I had met RC through Rick because Rick, RC was showing a couple of dogs that Rick had bred and meeting RC for the first time, you know, he was a character and we kind of hit it off, I think, from the beginning. You know, and I really learned a lot from just watching them. You know, I remember I would been working for Rick for probably about a year. And, you know, Rick taught me how to spray up a dog, you know, obviously the trimming and spraying up. And it was somewhere in Mississippi, Louisiana, and I was by myself and Gabriel flew in with whatever dog he was showing. And Gabriel took me aside and taught me how to spray up a dog. You know, and to this day, I remember it. And I continue to put my dogs together that way. You know, he just took me aside and said, you know, what you're doing is fine. But if you do it this way, it looked better. And sure enough.
Yeah. And he's a great teacher too, Gabe. Like even when I had the few times I got to be out there with him, just showing against him, I'd ask him a question. He always had a great answer for me. So
yeah, Gabriel had done a grooming seminar at Central States 2 years ago. And, you know, I went because, you know, I continue to learn to this day, you know, and I, you know, I want to learn always. And Gabriel took this, it was a hairy wire fox terrier, and he trimmed the face on it and trimmed the show side. And I sat there watching an hour and a half, you know, you could have walked it in the ring. And I had learned, I watching him, I was like, he was doing things that I was taught and that for some reason I had stopped doing them a specific way. And I think it really helped my trimming come back to what I wanted and the look that I was going for. And I was missing. I couldn't figure out why things were not looking the way I wanted them to. You know, but going to that and watching Gabriel, you know, I was just like, I was taught that way, you know, and I definitely learned new ways. And I don't, you know, I just over time, I stopped doing them, you know, without realizing it.
That's, you know, what was an eye opener then.
Yeah. You know, like I wish Gabriel would do a seminar every year. I would go every year.
So you're working with Scotty again. When did you decide to leave? When did you decide to go on with Scott? After Scott, you went on your own.
Yes. And, you know, Scott had allowed me to start showing some of my own dogs that I was getting paid for. And I was starting to get to the point that, you know, I had built myself a decent little string down there. And I kind of had it in my head that I really wanted to try and go on my own by the time I was 30. And, you know, I wasn't unhappy there. And so I had come home. I had gone on vacation in May for my birthday. And I'd come home, and then I had given Scott notice that I was at the end of the year, I was going to try and do this on my own. And I had my friend Lenny Brown. He, one of his clients, had a rental house outside of Atlanta. She was a shepherd lady, and so he had hooked me up with her. The house was open, and so I took the leap and I moved to Atlanta. I moved away from Texas, and one client is still with me to this day. Everybody else had gone back to Texas. Mm-hmm. You know, all the dogs that I'd brought. You know, but I like Texas, but everything's so far. I just didn't want to start off in Texas, and I would have ended up being in Texas, you know, because once you get established, you know, and I love the Southeast, so I knew I always kind of wanted to live out this way.
How did you meet Lenny? Just dog shows?
Yeah, dog shows. You know, he was working for Jim. He came to a dog show and somewhere in Mississippi, and, you know, he just came over and started talking, you know, Lenny, you know,
he, yeah. You know, you guys are like buddies when you guys are up. If I call Lenny, yeah, you're there. Really, because it's one of those things.
Yeah. You know, it was just, we just kind of hit it off, you know, from first meeting. You know, I don't even remember what they were there showing, but he was working for Jim.
Yeah.
You know, they're down there at one of those shows, and he just came, walked right over, started talking to me like we'd known each other forever.
Do you guys still talk almost every day?
Not every day, but a lot.
Right. Yeah.
You know, a lot of times when we're driving, you know, to pass the time.
Well, that's when we have a chance to talk on the phone when we're driving, basically. So,
yeah.
All of it's hands-free, right? So you know you're in, you say Atlanta area?
Yes.
Is that where you ended up? Well, who was your first big breakout dog then?
I guess the first dog that I had gotten hired for that I did any winning with, it was a Norfolk dog owned by Heidi Cole. And she would recommended to hire me. And that was the first Best in Show winner that I had had where I was completely on my own, you know, and I didn't know Heidi and Heidi didn't know me. And, you know, somebody liked me and they recommended me. And, you know, he's a pretty good, you know, he's a good Norfolk dog, you know, good show dog when his brain was working, you know, great on his legs.
Was the success of that dog that opened more doors for you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and once you start getting known in the area, you know, you pick up more and more people. I had picked up a little bit of a pretty good Westie business because Vanessa Fleming, when she had quit and they moved to Hawaii and she got married to Martin, she had sent a lot of her business to me, you know, all the local Westie business, you know, so I, you know, had good Westie business, which certainly helped, you know, to keep things going. And, you know, you just word of mouth, you know, right. People recommend right. You, people like the work, like the way you put down your dogs.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but I'm judging now, you know, that probably in the circles, you're known as a hardworking handler. And that probably helps a lot that people think of you as a hard worker. What do you attribute that to? Was it Scott? Was it Ricky or was it your family?
I think all the above, you know, probably, you know, my father had the mentality that his two sons were not going to be lazy. You know, like I remember one instance, my father always used to fix everything himself. He would never pay anybody to do anything. Well, when I was in high school, we moved from one side of town to the other. And so my father had the kitchen renovated before we moved into the new house. And he took the dishwasher out because he said, I have two dishwashers. I don't need it. I don't need one. You know, so he certainly taught me a work ethic, you know, and I always had summer jobs and, you know, I worked all through high school. I remember I filed my first W-2 when I was 13 years old, you know, always figuring out a way to make a dollar.
So you've seen a lot of dogs in your career, dogs of the that aren't being campaigned now that you were maybe involved with, or you wish you'd been involved with. Make sure they're dogs that aren't being shown now. What dogs stick in your mind as like templates in your head for that, even that breed or in that group, or even the dog you always wanted to show because of their character, their showmanship? We all have that bank.
There's actually, Wire Fox Terrier. That to me is a template of the breed standard. And it was a Wire Fox Terrier bitch named Iron Hills Jitterbug, and Peter Green showed her.
I remember
And, you know, standing there, to me, she was the epitome of breed type, the make and shape that I picture in a Wire Fox Terrier. I love that bitch. And I know she was very difficult, and people, you know, they complained that she wasn't the best walker and everything. And I'd certainly seen her destroy herself a few times, but I saw her one time where she put down, she didn't miss a beat, and she put on a dog show, and I saw exactly what she was. And I remember that. And to me, she was a beautiful bitch. I love, you know, the way she looked, you know, and that's what I see in a Wire Fox Terrier, or try and see in a Wire Fox Terrier. You know, and you always go back to the Mick. I mean, everybody will remember a Mick. You know, and there's plenty of dogs that I remember, and now that you put me on the spot, it's hard to think of them.
Well, we can do it in our own breeds. And I like when people ask me those questions, Irish setters and beagles come to mind. But yeah, it's hard when it's just thrown out there. But I, like when I was a kid, I can't even remember if the dogs were any good sometimes. So they just caught my attention and you had to watch them. I remember there was this shepherd bitch in my area shown by a handler named Scott McNair. And to this day, I still don't know if she was any good, but she caught my eye. And it always was in my head, that bitch. And but again, I was 9 or 10, so who knows? It was just exciting to watch. Well,
that's how Awesome Blossom caught my eye. You know, she was a beautiful show dog. She stood at the end of the lead, right. And you know, she never did anything wrong. You know, you couldn't help but look at her.
So, did your family come from whether you livestock people at all? Because you have a good eye for dogs and how you describe them. Did you come from livestock, or did you just learn that?
Well, my parents bred quarter horses. You know, when okay. I was a kid. You know, when I was young, I mean, they had gotten out of the horses when I was probably about 9, 10, 11. You know, and then they were just kind of did the dogs. You know, my parents, they both were kind of into the rodeo. My mother was a roper. You know, my father actually rode all three. He rode bulls, saddle bronc, and bareback bronc. You know, and he was a professional rider until he actually had quit because I was not along yet, but my brother was born and he had gotten hurt really badly. And he said, this was no way to raise a family. And that's why he got out of the rodeo.
Well, that background is there then, because I always find that when I meet somebody and somebody new comes to class or whatnot, and they catch on really fast. It's usually a lot of times it's a horse or cattle background person. When they catch on, like without even thinking, it's just natural for them. So what's next, Clayton? Have you thought about judging? How old are you now? You're not very old.
No, I'm not old enough to. I'm 44. So, okay. I mean, of course, you think about it and, you know, it comes and goes. You know, sometimes you're just like, yeah, you know, I want to judge someday. And then other times you're like, well, I don't know if I want to. I fear I'll take that step when we get there.
Right.
You know, I have a few more years left.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
But if someone came up to you, a youngster, and they wanted advice from you about, they said they wanted to be a professional handler, what advice would you give them?
Well, I think first off, and I probably would tell them, you know, to find a career, you know, at least try and go to school or, you know, even a trade school and get some sort of a career under their belt, because the dog show is still going to be here, you know, and that way, if things got rough, they have something to fall back on. You know, there's definitely times that I wish I would have taken a different path. I mean, the life I've lived has been very rewarding and I've really enjoyed it. But, you know, when times get hard, you kind of think about it, you know, especially when you're first starting off.
Right.
You know, you definitely are worried about, you know, having enough dogs to show to pay your bills and everything. I would, you know, and if you truly want to go down that road, you know, you definitely need to go and work, and not just weekend work. You need to really go and work and learn the day in and the day out, you know, of taking care of the animals and learning. Because you're not going to learn anything in a weekend, a month, a year, even. You know, you need to spend multiple years and learn from somebody. You know, learn how to properly put the dogs down, learn how to show the dogs. You know, so
what I find is lacking, and it's, I don't know so much, at least the handlers up here, I notice there's a lot of animal husbandry lacking in some of them. They don't know how to react when something goes wrong. You know, and there's always someone to reach out and help them. But when I was working, I always found Bobby and Gary and George, they're always on me about looking after the dogs first. Like, I always get that done first. That came first always. What advice would you give for them for that? How would you explain that to a youngster? Because the youngsters just see ribbons and running around the ring. So,
well, I mean, you have to pay attention to your dogs. And if you know your dog well enough, you know something is off when they're down. You know, you may not know what exactly is going on, but you know that something is off, and you can either at least own a thermometer and take a temperature. You know, I know there's plenty of younger people out there, they don't even own a thermometer.
Right.
And if the dog is off, you know, go ask somebody that you know has some experience, you know, so, you know, an older person, you know, and be like, hey, you know, can you look at my dog? You know, something's off. You know, and the more time you spend with your dogs, the more you're going to know them, and you can immediately notice if something is going wrong with the animal. You know, and I think that's a lot of it is, you know, they grab the dog, they run it around the ring, and they put it back in a crate. You know, they don't touch the dog throughout the day. They never see the dog. You know, they don't spend any time with the dog.
Okay, because even when they're out in the yard, you can tell if there's something, if there's an issue happening. You know something's going down. If how they eat, how they interact with each other, you can tell if it's not normal. So, I think there's some young great handlers. So we're not picking anybody, but there are some ones that just need to, when they go from junior handling or right into handling, they miss that part of learning. Unless they come from a livestock family, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and I think my suggestion would be to anybody that's going to take the leap into professional handling straight from juniors, just ringside them if that's the case, you know, because then you don't have to take care of the dog. It's the owner is.
George always called them ring jockeys, but never happened at those ones.
Yeah. I mean, if you know, if that's all you care about is the ribbons and running around the ring, then be a ring jockey.
Yeah. Now, are there moments in the sport that stick out to you? Be it watching dogs win, be it hanging out with Lenny, Scott, Rick. Is there something that you fall back on that you can be driving by yourself and all of a sudden you start laughing or smiling?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's definitely stories, you know,
sometimes
things that
get out of you, Clayton.
You think about, well, I mean, there's plenty of stories that we probably can't talk about, you know, but I think one thing that really sticks out is like we say when Scott won Best in Show with Stump, you know, in New York, you know, nobody even knew the dog was in New York City, you know, because we never told anybody. I mean, there were a few people very close that knew, but, you know, like, Scott wasn't going to take the dog, and I put the crate and the dog in the truck, and we went to the airport, you know, and I took the label off of his crate. I put a label on his crate that said George, you know, so nobody even knew that if they came in the room or anything, right. they would just think it was another Sussex Spaniel, you know, and I think this is a really funny story is Sussex Spaniels were scheduled at 3:15 in the afternoon for breed judging. So we get the dog ready. We didn't even take the dog into the garden until 10:45. And Matthew Stander comes walking over after the breed judging, and he says, I didn't even know that dog was here. And, you know, if Matt didn't know, you know we did a good job keeping the secret, you know, because Matthew definitely knew how to find out the good stuff.
Sure. What was it like hanging out with Lenny so much? I know you guys lived together for a while.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. You know, I mean, we'd go, you know, I mean, take care of the dogs and, You know, we always sat down and had dinner together. You know, sometimes we'd go out. Sometimes we would go to shows together. And, you know, it that part made it nice, you know, having going with somebody, you know, instead of now I go to the shows mostly by myself, you know, so it would be nice to have somebody to share the driving with at least.
Yeah. What dogs are you carrying these days?
If I go by myself, I will not take more than five with me because you know, and even doing five sometimes, you know, with a schedule, it makes it difficult. I just don't feel that I can do the dogs justice with having more than five dogs. I don't have the time to get them ready properly, you know, and I don't want to run around having other people show my dogs for me. You know, the people pay me to show their dogs. So, and that way I'm not killing myself to try and get everything in the ring. I have the time to properly make them look the way that they need to look, you know, because there's nothing more aggravating than, and you go to show a dog and you look down on it and you think to yourself, man, this dog, it looks like crap, you know, because you didn't have the time to put it together properly.
Right. And that is difficult. With today's shows getting smaller, do you have any thoughts on that? Because it seems like they're getting smaller everywhere. I've been even reached out from overseas in Ireland and whatnot. Shows everywhere are getting smaller. What do you think?
I think there's a combination of everything. I think it's the, you know, the lack of interest in purebred dogs, you know, from the general public. You know, I don't think people are interested as much as in purebred dogs. You know, certainly things have gotten more expensive, you know, so people that used to go a couple times a month, you know, are only going once a month or once every other month. And, you know, if they had a couple litters a year, now they're only having one litter a year, you know, because the, you know, all the vet care is more expensive, you know. And I know quite a few people have said that they're, you know, you used to be able to sell all your puppies, you know, find homes for all your puppies, and people have one puppy left and they're not leaving till they're 6 months old, you know, rather than, you know, everything that you're, you know, you keep the dog one or two that you like, and then everything else you place in homes, you used to be able to, they'd be gone by the time they were 10 weeks old. You know, now you still have those stragglers.
It's the whole, things been hard on breeders, like escalating vet costs, gas, food, hotels. It's just impossible for average folk to go to dog shows the way they used to, you know, and participate the way they used to. It's just hard. We're finding it up here, and I'm seeing it on results down there. It's just making things difficult. And the number of shows, even up here, Clayton, if I can go out my door and I can go 4 hours at west, 4 hours east and find a dog show, didn't used to be like that. It was just one dog show a weekend. But that's the way it goes.
Yeah, I have options every week.
Yeah. You know, there's lots of options. Like for the as many options as we have down here, you guys have twice as much. You know, just see it, you know. What's next? What do you think is going to happen next? You think dog shows are going to come back strong, or are clubs going to, like, my thoughts are, if clubs get too small, then they should naturally die or cluster up with somebody just to make the more depth in an area. Because it's a lot harder. Like, let's face it, there are some top dogs that can stay away from their competitor if they really want to.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, man?
Well, you know, you like to hope that it's going to come back, you know, that you're going to get new people get interested in dogs and everything. Honestly, you know, right now it looks like it's just going to kind of continue down the same path. And I certainly don't have the right answer. You know, yes, if you limited the amount of dog shows, didn't have as many, you're going to have bigger dog shows, but that's not going to increase the overall entry of the entire year, you know, of dogs entered through the American Kennel Club.
I understand that. Yeah. But I used to like to go down, like I would take dogs from up here and go down there and go on the Tarza, and you could finish them because the entries that were there, there was majors there. You could do it in the one trip. Now you're seeing, you're not finding majors in areas, and people are saving their really good young dogs for nationals and whatnot because they know there'll be majors there. It's just harder for the average book to find competition. In fact, the way they've made group placements now, you can get majors through group placements. That was never a way when we were kids. So
yeah, well, and I think they've done that because certain breeds, you know, they don't find points, ever, you know, outside of their national specialty or say a specialty. I mean, I find it, you know, definitely in terriers, it's hard to find majors. You know, you just don't have the breeders anymore, you know, and there's nobody coming up to replace them. You know, the people that are, you know, they're no longer breeding. You know, you used to, you know, there were breeders, you go to an area and there would be four or five breeders that lived in an area that bred the same breed, you know, and they'd all go to the local dog shows. Yes.
And the competition makes each other stronger. Well, there was a time in Ontario where English setters, you could just go and pick one out of the classes and that'd be your next best in show orders because everybody got so strong in that breed because they had to compete with each other. Anyway, we're getting too serious. That's tell me a funny story, Clayton.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what kind of funny stories you got.
Oh well, I was with you at a few shows where we set up together. We had a lot of fun. It was fun just going back and forth. So, what's next for Clayton then? I know you're not going to start judging for another 10 years, but you see you increasing dog shows. Or are you going to try to get more dogs to show? Have you that dog in your mind that you're waiting to grow up? What do you got?
I have some young stuff. I have some stuff that I've been sitting on, you know, that are growing up. And
are you breeding yourself now?
Wire fox terriers.
Okay.
You know, not a lot. I have a young puppy here that I think is very promising puppy dog that I'm growing up. You know, my problem is I never have time to show my own dogs.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because I got somebody. Yeah. Yeah. You know, so I put them on the schedule and I go, okay, I got to trim them this week, and you don't get to it and be like, okay, well, next week, well, next thing you know, a month's gone by and now you're starting the code all over.
Okay. Yeah. You have to have patience. And so with your group, it's such a patient wait, you know, for these dogs to be in code and to be ready to be shown the way you want to show them. So you don't want to, you see some that are just, you know, and there's some amazing trimmers out there, but then you see some that are just getting by. But
there's a lot of watching.
What's that?
What I said, there's a lot of getting by.
Yeah, it's hard. I have one last question for you then, Clayton.
Yes.
If you were to meet the 20-year-old Clayton, is there any advice you'd give him now?
Well, probably don't make some of the mistakes that you had made in life.
Oh, we learn from those, though.
you definitely learn from them, but, you know, there were probably some mistakes that I would have maybe been further along that I didn't do. Maybe not turn down a couple of the dogs that I had turned down. But I think the biggest mistake was don't sell that apple stock when I was 20 years old that I sold. That would have been the biggest thing, you know, because I thought I was going to be smart. You know, and
it's funny.
That was a mistake, but, you know, that's how you learn, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Where are you off to this weekend?
I'm going to go 3 days in Southern Illinois. They're actually, they got about 650 dogs, which up in this area, that's a pretty decent size. That's a fair size.
How long
size,
is that for you?
About 5 hours. Okay. 5 hours.
That's so good. Yeah. All right. All right, man. Well, it's good talking to you. And be safe out there on the road. And I'm sure I'll see you down the road somewhere. So
yeah. Never know where we'll turn up at.
That's right, man. All right. Thanks, Clayton.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Clayton. Good luck down the road. It was great catching up with you. I hope we'll see you somewhere down the road. If you like what you see here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. And don't forget about the podcast that comes out each week, The Dog Show Drive. And I'll see you down the road.